time to sigh.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Sai's glory, his divine story. Every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Om Shri Sai Ram. Offering myself at the lotus feet of Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba, this is your host Karuna, and you're tuned to Morning Glory on Radio Sai's Thursday Live. Today is the 11th of May 2017. Dear sisters and brothers, as I am away from the office, I have lined up a brand new episode of Tris with Divinity for you. It is hosted by my colleague Mr. Bishu Prushti. This interview will be followed by a medley of your favorite music. I request you to please send us your feedback to this episode of Morning Glory by email at listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for your company this morning and may you have a saisome Thursday today. And I will be back next Thursday with a lot of fresh news and updates for you right here on Morning Glory. So please don't forget to join me then. Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Tryst with Divinity, our series of conversations with people who have been touched by the love of Bhagwan. We now offer you a conversation with Dr. Joseph Fenoff from the United States. He is a distinguished dermatologist and is the Chief of Medical Staff Education for Physicians and Nurse Practitioners at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center, Union City, California, USA. He is also the communication consultant as well as the editor of the staff education newsletter of the same medical center. But more importantly, Dr. Fenoff is the medical director of the Ashland Free Medical Clinic, a completely free medical facility in the United States of America. He has been a devotee of Bhagwan Baba since the 80s, and every year he voluntarily serves in the Sri Satya Sai General Hospital in Puttaparthi for 3 weeks. This conversation was recorded with him in July of 2016 after the Guru Purnima celebrations in Prashanti Nilayam. And in conversation with him is Radio Sai's Bishu Prushti.
Sai Ram, and welcome Dr. Joseph Fenoff to the studios of Radio Sai.
Sai Ram, it's good to be here.
Today is July 20th, 2016. The Guru Purnima celebrations is over. And this year, the highlight of the Guru Purnima celebrations was this World Youth Festival. What a festival it was of energy, love, spiritual fervor, enthusiasm, fantastic. 3,000 youth from 70 countries. Puttaparthi was something else. And you were someone whom Bhagwan blessed to be deeply associated with this program. Even though you're technically not a youth, but you were part of the faculty who designed the Satya Sai International Youth Leadership Program. You have been a young adult advisor in the United States for so many years. So you had this opportunity to really interact closely with the youth and groom them and give a talk in a cyclothal. So you're so much part of this event. So how was it being part of such a beautiful, fantastic festival?
Well, it's very hard to put into words. I can tell you that it made me very, very happy, and I was very proud of the young adults. And it was just such a blessing. I was so thankful to Swami to be part of all of this. And indeed, it was a very, very special event. It started off with the youth leadership program. And as you mentioned, I've had the blessing of being associated to be part of the development and delivery of this, and also had the chance to be a faculty for one of the modules, which was the communication module. So it was just wonderful. It's the second year that we've done the leadership program,
mm-hmm.
and the really beautiful part about it is, besides the fact that we had wonderful interactions with the students throughout the year, based on a WebEx type of setup for the first six modules, the last three modules were here in Puttaparthi both last year and this year, so we got a chance to meet everybody and get to know them very, very well. And so we, that was really inspiring to be with all the youth last year and then this year. Last year we had so many graduates, we had 50 graduates, and we took eight of them that were really excited about bringing this work forward, and they were the faculty
mm-hmm.
for the first six modules, and they even helped with the last three. So the that was really exciting to see how they were taking this leadership program to the next level with their enthusiasm and wisdom and knowledge and love for Swami.
Mm.
So many fond memories. And then this year it was a class much bigger, 200, and we all got to know each other well, and I was just so impressed with the love and enthusiasm and really the deep understanding of Swami's teachings that all these youth had. And many of them are leaders in their country and in their zone, and they really have tremendous leadership skills to begin with. So there's so much that we as adults are learning from the youth. And then to hear them speak and introduce speakers and then give talks in the Koan Mandir throughout the youth festival, I got to know them even better.
Mm.
And what a deep understanding each one of them had for Swami, and the inspiring stories that they told about how they came to Swami and how Swami has changed their lives for the better, and how Swami's teachings and his love has just transformed their lives. So it was so inspiring to hear all that and be part of that.
Is there any particular instance you're going to remember about the youth festival for a long, long time?
The youth festival, I think there'll be actually many, many memories. I think that some of the stories that I remember, for instance, Julio from Panama talked about how Swami has guided his life and how Swami worked miracles in his life. And I had a chance to meet this young man who has such a deep love for Swami. You can just feel the love and that he just emanates and he shares with everyone, and how what a wonderful person and what a wonderful leader he is. And to hear his sharing was just wonderful. The other thing that I remember is the debate that they had. I thought that was interesting, and I was wondering how that was going to turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a realistic debate on the questions youth had, and is it okay to say a white lie, and how, mm-hmm. you know, getting back to Swami's teachings, when you tell a white lie, even if it's a little lie, you have to realize you're going to have to back that up with other lies, and how it's just always best to tell the truth. And they work through real life situations. And then the exhibit was just so wonderful that they had on the upper deck, and also the lower deck, that was wonderful, breakthrough research on health and how, for instance, the blood pressure could be reduced by saying the Gayatri Mantra.
Yes.
And doing breathing techniques before and after the readings. And what does Swami have to say about healthy eating? So we were reminded about those things. And then on the upper deck, they had a wonderful, the game of life. So the bottom line for all of this material, which I've only gone through a good part of it, I still have some to go through, is that no matter what question a youth will have or what challenge they face in life, Swami has given the answer. There's absolutely nothing,
yes,
nothing that could happen that Swami hasn't given an answer. And the good part is that a lot of us haven't read everything Swami has said, right? So we might be faced with something where we don't know what Swami has said. And so the fallback position, which is so beautiful, is regardless whether we know Swami's teachings, once we start and we make that connection, which is plugging into the source, once we make that beautiful connection with Swami, we're not sure of something, we go inside. And Swami, who's inside all of us, will always give us the answer to any question or challenge. And the fact that one of the speakers mentioned that for every single challenge we have in life, Swami has a solution. We just have to make that connection. So those are some of the things I remember. And one of the best things is all the wonderful relationships that we had as we got to know each other, which will continue on for years as we work together in Swami's fold and his organization.
Wow. I think each person connecting with each other and learning also to connect more strongly to their inner Swami. I think.
Yes, that was the main thing. I think that I was so impressed because every single speaker who spoke during the leadership program and who spoke during the Word Youth Festival, that the main point that was made is how can I strengthen my connection with Swami, the God inside of us. So yes, I think that came out on every single talk is what practices do we do? What is our personal sadhana? How do we connect with the inner Swami so that we can lead our lives in the best possible way and realize that we have the divinity is in each one of us and in every single person we're speaking to and in all of creation. And then from there we can live our lives accordingly.
Yeah, that's amazing. Can I ask you how it would have been if you were in the age group of 15 to 20 or 15 to 25 when you came to know Bhagwan?
Oh my goodness. I have actually thought about that. And I'm really not sure. One of the things I try and share with the youth is that they are so lucky to know about Swami at this young age because I didn't know about him until I was probably at the end of the young adult age group or above. And there are so many challenges that I faced that Swami's guidance would have been so helpful for me. So I can only imagine what it would have been. I think Swami had to do a lot of work to save me from any predicaments, keep me from getting into trouble. Of course, I did have good guidance internally because I was brought up in the Catholic faith, my Catholic faith, mm-hmm. and my mother was a very devout Catholic who I respect so much. She reminds me in many ways of Mother Teresa. I think she's a living saint, and so I've learned so much from her.
Wow.
And so, in that sense, my mother and I, now that I think of it, it may not have been all that different because even though my mother isn't what someone would consider a Psi devotee in the usual sense, she is a Psi devotee in the most important sense because she follows the teachings of Jesus Christ, which are identical with Satya Sai Baba. We talk about Sai Baba's teachings all the time, almost every conversation that we have on the phone, because she says, oh, Sai Baba is so wise. I can relate to everything that he says. And so she was teaching me the same thing that was from her tradition. And so I had, I think, thanks to my mother and my father, especially my mother, is, you know, that deep inner connection so that if I was doing something wrong, I had this feeling, oh, I did something wrong and I have to follow what my conscience is telling me. However, it would have been a blessing. I guess everything has its time and place. However, I think it would have been even more wonderful.
So you had a beautiful upbringing, an upbringing where you learned to love God, learned to follow your conscience.
Yes.
So how was it when you came to know Bhagwan, and when did that happen?
Well, it was a long journey, actually. I think it actually started when I think about it, back when I got out of the service in 1969. After high school, I went into the Naval Air Force.
Okay.
And I was on active duty for about 4 or 5 months, and then the rest of my almost 6 years was in the reserves.
And while you were pursuing medicine?
Right. After I got out of that, off active duty, then I did my undergraduate for, 4 years, and then I went into medicine after that, medical school. So yes, so all this time, or most of that time, I was in the reserves. And when I got off of active duty, I had this sudden urge, or a powerful urge, I should say, to focus on my spiritual progress and find whoever on the earth was the most enlightened person to help me be my teacher. So I was looking for the best teacher I could find.
Mm-hmm.
And
so this desire was always there to progress on the spiritual path.
Yes, and I think it was probably present as a youngster, although I didn't feel it so concretely. Maybe it was just an inner prompting. I felt it very strongly when I got out of the military service.
Was there any particular event or anything that happened which made you to go inside or made you to think more about spirituality and the meaning of life, or was it just natural?
I'm not sure. While I was in the military, I had a lot of close calls where I could have got into big trouble by just following my non-spiritual urges. And I somehow, as I reflected on that, I thought, there must be someone that's guiding me that kept me out of trouble and getting into doing things that I would later really regret. And I felt that there was some unseen hand that was just protecting me and keep me from doing things
mm-hmm.
that I was otherwise inclined to do. So at that point, I started meditating, and that was, I think, the start of my spiritual journey in 1969, as I started to learn how to do meditation and some other advanced.
It's on your own.
Well, no, I learned it from a teacher who taught the meditation, and I learned it from someone.
So you're constantly looking for someone who can guide you on the spiritual path.
Yes.
And you started off with meditation.
Mm-hmm. I did.
And it helped you?
It helped me tremendously. I meditated for a number of years, actually, and I practiced this technique until about 1969 till 1985, and I felt there was a lot of mental peace, mental clarity. And yet the one thing that I felt that was lacking is my heart felt dry. I was very successful as a physician. I had a reputation of being a good doctor and was successful in many ways. I was teaching at a local medical school, and I had really all the things that one would want on the material sense at that point. And I still felt there was something lacking. And so that was the time in 1985 that I think I was really ripe for finding out about Swami. And so at that time, a friend told me about Sai Baba. And it was really incredible, because at that particular time, I realized that maybe I had to find an additional technique or a different technique, because a few things were bothering me. This particular technique, I thought, you know, it costs money, and when I learned the advanced techniques, it costs even more money. And I thought, gosh, there's a lot of my friends who would like to learn, but they couldn't because they couldn't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
So I just felt uncomfortable about that. And then also I just felt that even though I was successful in life, my heart needed to expand, and I needed to explore other options. So when my friend told me about Sai Baba, this was in 1985, I immediately became very interested and wondered, is this the person that I was looking for? And so I started reading a couple of books about Sai Baba, and the first few pages that I read, it started answering all my spiritual questions that I'd had. For example, my question about should spiritual information like this that's really important be free or not? And Satya Sai Baba said, all spiritual information and teachings should be free of charge, and no secrets you should be able to share with everyone. And then furthermore, in the meditation technique, when I did my meditation and also the advanced cities technique, it was taking an hour in the morning, an hour at night, a lot of time. And sometimes when I would be in deep meditation, I'd hear some outside disturbance that would bother me. And I thought, oh, I wish I didn't have this disturbance. And I read in Swami's writings, he said, when you're in meditation, if you hear someone coughing or something like that, instead of getting upset or disturbed, you should go and help them, find out what the problem is and help them. And so I mm-hmm. thought, gosh, I'm afraid that I don't have the right attitude here. And I had opened up also the whole field of service that I could spend my time, the 2 hours a day that I was doing in meditation, I could instead spend in service. And so I decided to actually at that point in time completely drop meditation
mm-hmm.
and just realize that everything for me, I felt at that point in time was the path of service and being of service to others, whether it was at my work or doing other work in the Sai organization to help others. So that was a big change for me. And of course, Swami has taught some very simple techniques of meditation, the light meditation, soham meditation, when you concentrate on an object for 12 seconds and multiples thereof. So he gives many simple but very powerful techniques. So then eventually I got back into meditation. However, for a period I just dropped all forms of meditation and just went right to service based on my natural inclinations.
You said, you know, when you are busy with the other meditation from 69 to 85, your heart still was dry.
Yes, yes.
What do you mean by that? Like, what was lacking? You said you had a lot of clarity, you were successful in your work, and you were actually happy with the way you were progressing as a person in terms of as a professional, and your mind was calm. But what was lacking? What do you exactly mean by heart was dry?
Well, I think that I wasn't making the heart-to-heart connection with people, my patients, for example,
uh-huh.
that I could have in the deep level that I was able to once I knew about Swami's teachings and realized that I was actually not taking care of a patient, just another person. I was actually serving God in human form, and, you know, that work would be worship with the proper attitude. And so with that, my heart started opening up, and I started being able to feel what they were feeling, whether it was joy or sadness, on a much deeper level. And so I felt my heart expanding. I don't know how to describe it initially. I just felt that that I wasn't having enough of the feeling part of medicine.
Somehow, I mean, even though you are practicing medicine, which is a profession which is so much imbued with compassion, it is ironical that you are still feeling so dry inside. You are still feeling so much was lacking. Your heart was not feeling like a heart.
Yes. And I'm not sure how to describe it, because I think many people, at least patients, would tell me they felt I was a very compassionate physician. However, from my perspective, I didn't feel that my heart was feeling everything that it should. It wasn't expanding. So very difficult for me to put into words. I think outwardly I may have seemed like a very caring and compassionate person. At least that's the feedback I got from family, friends, and patients. However, from my side, I just felt I needed to. There's just something that was lacking. That I wasn't doing. I can't really put it into words.
And were you really searching for someone who can help you?
Well, I was, and I thought that I had found the person when I was doing this other form of meditation. However, when I start feeling that there is something lacking and that this has not got me to the place I wanted to go, then yes, I was very, very much looking for someone at that point.
Okay.
And that's, so I was very ripe.
And ripe for Bhagwan to enter your life.
Yes.
Okay, so you started off by reading his books.
Yes.
And so you believed whatever was written there?
Yes, unlike many stories I've heard of people where they were very skeptical and everything, once I start reading about Swami...
Which is the book you read first?
Well, there's two of them, and I'm not sure which one I read first. The two that I read almost simultaneously at the same time was by Dr. Sam Samwise, The Holy Man and the Psychiatrist, and then Howard Merpeth's book, The Man of Miracles.
Okay.
And so as I was reading through those books, it seemed like everything that I read was just resonating with me, and there was no question in my mind that I realized this is the person that I had been searching for all of my life when I started on the spiritual journey. So as soon as I had that realization, the friend who told me about it, I made a trip to Puttaparthi to visit Sai Baba at that time. So when I found out in 85, within probably 7 or 8 months, I made my first trip in 1986.
So how was it when you first time had the darshan of Bhagwan?
Well, the first darshan I had, and I might just say that one of the things that I wanted to do when I read, even though everything was resonating with me when I read the books, is I wanted to check him out to see if this was for real. I wanted to... It wasn't that I was doubting, it's just I said, this I have to find out.
But still you wanted something more, to be more confirmed about this phenomenon.
Absolutely, I had to meet Swami just exactly. So I needed to meet him in person and then just learn more.
Yeah,
about
know for yourself. I mean, know for sure.
Know for sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I made that first trip, and I'm pretty sure it was actual first darshan that I had. I didn't know about the weights or anything, so I was just wearing some khaki pants and a regular shirt, and I was sitting, and I had a back problem, so I was sitting where the sick people are in the chairs in the sand. And so Swami, I was very fortunate. Swami came right over to me, and he asked me my name, where I was from, and he talked to me for
the first
a long
day.
Time. Yes. And he came right over, and he also materialized some vibhuti for me. And actually, he spent a long time with me. I thought it was just a few minutes. My friend says, he spent a long time with you. What were you talking about? And I couldn't remember much other than, that he made this ash and that, and so after that, I was lovingly told, what to wear. And and I started learning about Swami. And also, being a physician at that time, I heard, not from Swami himself, but from other people, that he had a hospital here. And so I immediately went to the hospital to find out if I could volunteer there. And this was way before they let foreign doctors, volunteer at the hospital. And so I went over there and I spoke with Dr. Chari, who was the medical director, and I said, I'd like to volunteer. And so he looked at me and he said, okay, come over here. And so he put up an x-ray. He says, okay, read this. And of course, I'm a dermatologist, and most dermatologists don't have much experience at x-rays once they specialize. However, I had been spending a lot of time in emergency rooms through my dermatology residency and before that, and so I was able to, with God's grace, identify the fracture. So I guess he was trying to see if I was really a doctor. And so after that, he let me see just one patient. It happened to be one of Swami's students who had a skin rash. Mm-hmm. So I said, here, you can see this patient. So I saw one person, and I was very happy and did my best to help. And then after that, there was really no other place for me to work. And so I was just happy I saw one patient. And then when I went back, people were telling me, wow, you got a chance to work at Swami's hospital. We hadn't heard of any Western doctors working there. Maybe Dr. Sam Sinowise did, but we haven't heard of anyone else working. So I think that was the beginning of Swami working on the eagle for me, because the next trip when I came back, the first trip I was put in the shed when I first came, and the second trip I was also put in the shed when I first got there. And so I was, in the middle of the night, a person who was sleeping next to me got really sick. And so people knew that I was a physician, so they said, hey, why don't you take care of him, bring him to the hospital? So I said, sure, of course. So I brought him over. He basically had a bad case of diarrhea. And so I brought him into the hospital. And as soon as we got there, the doctor that was there, they said, are you relatives or friends? I says, well, you know, I actually didn't meet him until just in the shed, and I'm just trying to help him, whatever I can do. They said, okay, you're going to be his nurse and orderly. And so I said, okay. And so so basically my job was to keep the room and the bathroom clean and just to help out and be with them. And also they didn't have anyone except for family provide the food. So, you know, when it was time for him to eat, when he was able to eat, then I would go out to get the food for him. So the thing is, what Swami was teaching me is, well, whatever our role is, we have to play that role. And I didn't do a very good job, because even though I did a good job of cleaning the bathroom and all those other things, I think, I hope and pray I did, the thing that I didn't do good is I was thinking like a doctor, and I was thinking, oh, the doctor should be doing this or that. And he was being taken care of by one of the best doctors in the world, Dr. Kamala. Mm-hmm. And so there was no worries there. But still my mind was thinking, oh, should he be, because it was different, you know, the way that she was practicing than the way we might do it in the United States, which is perfectly understandable. Things are done different here, and it's more suitable for this environment. Anyways, so Swami realized I hadn't learned that lesson. So when I got back to the United States, this happened within a year of this experience, where Swami realized, okay, I'm trying to flatten this guy's ego, but it still needs more work. So the nurses went on strike at Kaiser Permanente, which is a big organization that I work for. And so at that time, the nurses weren't available, and we have hospitals and emergency rooms to take care of, and so we couldn't shut those down. So they took all the doctors. They said, half of you are going to continue to work as doctors, and the other half are going to work as nurses.
Oh.
So you can guess what side I worked on. I was assigned to be a nurse in the emergency room. And that was quite an experience. And at that time, I learned, I think I passed this exercise, because I did a good job as a nurse. Even though I was standing there with the doctor, Dr. Wagner, who was doing a beautiful job suturing, I wasn't thinking of telling her what to do. I was just being,
A nurse,
exactly. And the other good part about it is, although I've always had high respect and appreciation for nurses, I had even a much increase, because I realized what a difficult job, especially in a busy emergency room. Mm. I don't know how they do it. And so anyways, it was a very good experience, and Swami, I was helping to flatten the ego.
Mm. But it's very interesting that, you know, the first darshan you had, Swami comes directly to you and he gives you prasadam and he talks to you.
Yes.
And as a consequence, what happens is you want to go and serve. How did that happen? Like, what was this urge to serve? How, from where did that come from? So many people come here and Swami blesses them, but they don't think that we should go and serve. But you had this strange urge that the moment Swami blessed you, the next thing you did was to go to the general hospital and check if you can volunteer.
Yes, I don't know where the urge came from. It just came. You know, I just had this strong urge that I have to go to the hospital and volunteer. And then subsequently I was able to, so I don't know where it came from. It just came. And like you say, it was probably tied to the blessing from Swami, and he was sparking something innate that is in present in all of us, which is, you know, the desire to help others.
Yes.
And so Fortunately, I work with a group of doctors, mainly from the United States, however some were from other countries, where in subsequent visits, in the early 1990s, we started doing medical camps in the ashram. We got permission to do that, and around Guru Purnima and the birthday, and sometimes during Shivaratri. And we also were allowed to go to the surrounding villages and perform Grama Seva there, where we would set up a medical camp there and take care of them and do some education on hygiene. And so I got a chance to do that. And then in the mid-1990s, we were starting to integrate with the hospital. We had a few medical camps in the general hospital itself. And then pretty soon we were allowed to do rotations, and I was able to work as a dermatologist in Swami's hospital.
Fantastic. And your visits to Puttaparthi only grew, and it became more frequent.
Yes.
And I remember when there was this international medical conference, Sai Medical Conference in 2005, Bhagwan so lovingly called you near, and out of the blue, he created that ring for you.
Yeah.
It was such a beautiful sight, and to see that interaction between you and Bhagwan. And, you know, nobody had any clue that, at least I was sitting there, and I thought, here's a doctor who's come for the first time, and, you know, Swami has blessed him so unexpectedly. You know, because you are not someone who Swami was talking to or anything. Suddenly he called you, and, you know, he blessed you. But today, as I sit here and listen to you, I feel for how many years Swami has been grooming you for that day.
Yes.
You know, right from the time, if you, even before you came to know Bhagwan, invisibly, as you said, you know, he was there with you, protecting you even during your days in the Air Force.
Yes.
You know, and that is how that spark of spirituality was growing, and he was there all the time looking after it until it came to a point where he felt, I should take now personal charge. And, you know, and it's time now where he needs my direct guidance.
Yes, that's very true. And actually, you know, Swami knows what each one of us needs. And so even though I got a lot of attention that first visit, and I was allowed Padmanabhaskara every now and then, the first 16 years, mostly I was being ignored. I wasn't having a lot of personal interaction with Swami. However, I was happy just to have his darshan. And what one of my wise friends told me one time is, when we're discussing this, that when we go here to Puttaparthi, when Swami was still here in physical form, we're going here to have Swami's darshan, not vice versa. And so it's not... Not vice versa, for him to have our darshan.
Yeah.
You know? So
you're going to have his darshan.
That's right. The important thing is to have his darshan,
yeah.
And whether he looks at us or not, just being in his presence is,
yes,
such a wonderful thing. So what that forced me to do is, I didn't have as much personal attention as some of my other friends who, you know, got called for interviews. And so basically it forced me to go inside and,
yes,
have the inner view with Swami all day long. And so for many years, as time went on, I had less and less. It's not that my desire to have interaction with Swami went to zero. It's just I had less and less when I was in his physical presence, because when I was home, I was feeling his presence throughout the day, not 24/7. However, more and more I was feeling his presence and having his direct guidance, and I was just perfectly content with that, because what could be better than that, to have his guidance throughout the day? So at the time that I got to the point where my desire for an interview and personal interaction had gone down to whatever the minimum could be, because we always would like to have interaction, mm-hmm, that's when Swami started calling me and giving much more attention, you know, at that point in time.
Wow.
And also guidance. So yes, it was, and that interaction I'll never forget, because it was so powerful. It was so loving. It was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. And when he created the ring, I thought, when he looked at me, I thought I was doing something wrong, because I was shifting around. I wasn't sitting properly on the ground. And he kept on looking at me. I thought, what am I doing wrong? And then I realized he was trying to get my attention. And anyways, then when I finally understood that and people helped me, then I went up and I had such a loving interaction with him. And in addition to the beautiful ring that he made, we had a nice conversation, and I'm not sure how long that it was. However, I know they chanted the Sri Suktam, which actually they were halfway through when he called me up.
Okay.
And apparently, I think he wanted me up there when it started, because he told the boys when they finished it to start over again.
Oh,
and
okay.
Do it again. And so anyway, so I know that's about an 8.5 minute.
Yes.
So I was up with him for at least that long.
Wow.
And we talked about a number of things, and one of the things that he asked me about is, where are your children?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, my children? oh, Swami, the young adults. And so we started talking about, and I was so happy. And of course, even though I know that the young adults are all of our children, it's not just any particular person, the fact that he spoke to me about the young adults, and I did feel they were like family to me, and how all that started is another incredible story.
Oh, wow. Your association with the young adults.
Yes, yes.
Okay. Well, we'll come to that, but one thing I want to share here is, it is so amazing that, you know, he wanted you to develop that inner connect with him.
Mm-hmm.
And once you are fully confirmed in that, then he gave you outside chances so that you are now dependent on this outside guru. He wanted, they say the real purpose of a guru, a yes. Sadguru, is yes. to awaken the inner guru.
Correct.
And I think that is what Bhagwan was doing all the 16 years. But your desire to serve had not dwindled even a little bit. You were coming and serving, you know, and,
yes.
and you're having darshan and you're connecting. And I think Swami, once he felt that, okay, now he has got that connect. So it's okay now. I can give him chance. He's not going to be fully dependent on this now. He will know how to handle it now.
That's true.
And then, and I think it was sort of a reward and a blessing for all the training that he gave, and which you very silently imbibed. Instead of, you know, getting frustrated, or instead of feeling, how come I'm doing so much of service, I come every year, spend so many thousands of rupees and come and serve in his hospital, and this Baba does not even look at me, does not even talk to me. You never had any of such thoughts, isn't it?
No. As a matter of fact, one of the years, occasionally I would get Padmaskar with the other doctors and save adults at the end of our service, and Swami taught all of us a beautiful lesson. There's a short period where he stopped giving Padmaskar to anyone.
Yes.
And he actually gave the reason to some of the lady doctors, and then he explained something. He said, your service to your patients is my Padmaskar.
Yes.
I cannot give you anything higher than that. And so when I heard that, I was so happy, and I realized that when I'm serving patients at Swami's hospital or at home, that, you know, I'm getting his Padmaskar, and he says, I can't give anything higher than that. And as you know, I'm a dermatologist. So I get a chance to touch and hold people's feet often, so I get to have the figurative and also the literal Padmanabhaskar. Mm. And so it's just a wonderful blessing. And, you know, after I had worked at Swami's hospital, the general hospital here, for probably about 3 or 4 years, it was some of the most difficult work I've ever done as far as the number of patients, the intensity of interactions. It was physically very grueling because I'm used to seeing maybe 30 patients in person, and here I saw over 100 patients one day. And of course, that's with the Telugu translator and everything. So it was physically very, very demanding. And many of the cases were new to me, like leprosy and cutaneous TB. So I had to do a lot of studying throughout the night. I'd be studying the Indian dermatology textbooks because there's no other person to help give me guidance. I was the only person working there. And so I was having to learn from, you know, the Indian dermatology textbooks, whatever I didn't know about things that were unique and a little different here. And so I got that kind of education. And then I, even though it was difficult, it was the most enjoyable work that I've ever done. I mean, the joy that I would get taking care of patients and making that connection and seeing how happy they were and how patient appreciative they were, I never experienced such joy. And so I realized that this, the way to happiness for me is serving other people in whatever venue I could, and I happened to be a doctor, so why not do it where I could here and at home? And so I realized after working here, hey, we have a lot of poor people back in the United States, right in my own backyard, that need this service. Why don't we start a free clinic? So I got that urge after I'd worked here a few years, and then I started asking colleagues, and I was amazed. Everyone I talked to said, Joel, count me in. I'll help. Everybody was so excited. My colleagues at Kaiser, my Sathya Sai Baba devotees that, you know, when I asked them about it. And then the most important was the young adults.
Mm-hmm.
The young adults I had been involved with since about 1994, and this was about 2003. And so I developed a relationship with a number of them. They're like my family. Mm-hmm. They're at my house every week doing study circles, and then, you know, their monthly meeting. And some days when they were doing service projects, some of the guys would be at my house almost 7 days a week.
Oh,
so it was like a young adult hangout, and it was so wonderful being with them. And they would stay up all night to help me before I would come to party. You know, I would bring a bunch of medicines and they'd take all the samples and package them up properly. And I developed the dermatology textbook to help teach the doctors here, you know, how to practice dermatology when they didn't have someone like myself or the other dermatologists that volunteer here how to take care of the patients. And so we were printing that and we were behind schedule and we worked all the way through the night. And there was a bunch of them over at my home and they were happy. And that's the kind of sacrifice they have. They would do anything to help, you know, at Swami. So anyways, that was, and the reason I bring up the young adults is because they were the most important factor for starting the free clinic. I don't think I would have had the confidence to do it without the young adults, because starting a free clinic is like starting a small hospital as far as all the regulations in the United States. And the turning point, I think, is when I asked one of the young adults, the first young adult that I asked, his name is Pavangela, and he was doing a computer program, and I was visiting the young adults because I was helping them with this project. And I asked him, I says, Pavan, I'm thinking about starting a free clinic. Would you be interested in helping? His eyes almost popped out of his head. Oh. I've never seen anyone so enthusiastic in my life. I've never seen anything like that. And when I saw that, I thought, oh, my God, this is wonderful. The force and enthusiasm. And after that, I knew that Swami was going to make it happen. And then I talked to other young adults who had almost equal enthusiasm to this first young adult. And so I knew, okay, with the young adult help and all the adults and all my doctor friends and nurses, I know this is going to happen. Swami will help us. And then everything just started, like, it was kind of like turning the key in a car, you know, like Swami says, you know, when you turn on the key, you don't have to think about all the complex things that happens. You just turn the key and automatically everything happens. So at that point, it was like the ignition key was turned and everything just started unfolding.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. And so the clinic runs even now, isn't it?
Yes, 11 and a half years after starting.
Fantastic. And perhaps this is the only completely free clinic. I mean, in some ways, if anyone asks, can the model of medical philosophy, the system of medical healthcare that Bhagwan has set up in Puttaparthi and Whitefield, can it be taken elsewhere? You think of the Ashland Free Clinic, and in some ways it shows to everyone that it is replicable. You can replicate it if you have the heart, if you have the faith.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's very true. And I know that a lot of people were thinking along those lines when I told them this was modeled after what I've learned in India. They said, well, you know, what works in India is not going to work in the United States. And so I just didn't listen to any of that. They said, you have to charge for something. You have to do these other things. I says, no, everything has to be free. And so Swami made everything happen. So many miracles have happened, Bishu, that almost every week a miracle happens, and they're on so many different levels. The very first miracle, would you like me to talk about something?
Please,
okay.
Yeah.
There's like, I'll describe some financial, then human resources, and other miracles.
Yes.
So the first thing is you need money. And of course, no one is getting paid, and so we and there's a sizable amount to pay for all the insurances you need and the supplies. So
how many doctors and paramedical staff you have for this clinic?
Well, to begin with, we had probably a core of about 20, 25, and now we've had over 600 people over the last 11 and a half years.
600 people?
Yes.
Welcome to the Ashland Free Clinic.
Over the last 11 and a half years, yes.
Oh, my God. Yes. And it's completely free?
Completely free, yes. Completely free.
All days of the week?
No. It's just on Saturday. It's just on Saturday. And so for a period, we had also pediatrics on Wednesday evening. However, with the Affordable Care Act being passed in the United States, all children were being covered by insurance pretty much. So then that wasn't needed. However, we continue the adult where they still need the service. Many people fall through the cracks and don't qualify for the insurance. So it's every Saturday. So it's just one day a week.
Other days, it is charged normally.
Oh, no, it's not open on the other days, because most everybody else is working their day job at Kaiser Permanente or private practice or someplace
else. Okay, so it opens once a week.
Once a week.
It opens, and on that day it is free.
Correct.
That's it. So it's a completely free clinic, it's just that it is open one day in a week.
That's right, and we did it purposely on Saturday because most of the doctors and nurses are working their regular job, you know, during the week, and so some of them, of course, had to work through the weekend. However, most of them had some availability on the weekend.
Oh, okay. So it's fantastic. It's completely volunteer-driven.
Yes, 100%.
100% volunteer-driven. Fantastic. So how do you manage?
Well, that's a good spiritual practice for me, because it really keeps me and actually a core of about 12 other people quite busy, because even though we're only open one day a week, things happen throughout the week. And so we have to be doing a little bit of work 7 days a week. And yes. So how do I manage? That's another teaching of Swami. He's taught me to rely on him, because it doesn't seem like there's enough hours in a day, and yet he makes things happen. So there's a number of people that help. I serve as a medical director, and we have another person as a main administrator. So all these people have other jobs. However, they are doing this throughout the week, and also the young adults are helping. And the nice part about this clinic, I think, which is a beautiful model, is that we have a big group from the Southeast organization that support our clinic, and then that includes the young adults, which are really the driving force that got it started. And we couldn't have opened it without the young adult help, and we couldn't be continuing for all these years without their help. The spirit and enthusiasm of the young adults is just incredible, and it's just that they're the key to our clinic. And then we have a group of people who are from colleagues from Kaiser who don't know anything about Satsai Baba. Many loving doctors and nurses have volunteered. Okay. And then we have people from the local community that have these skills, and they notice what's going on, and they just volunteer. Oh. And some of the local community are actually patients, former patients, mm-hmm. or current patients that say, hey, I want to give back to the clinic. So like that, that's the volunteer base. And some of the miracles, when we first started the clinic, we didn't really have a penny. We hadn't mm-hmm. really done any collection. We followed all of Swami's guidelines that no public solicitation of funds. So I was praying to Swami one day before I went to a meeting at the high school, where people told me that I was a little bit crazy to try and start something for free and, you know, not try and get funds by public solicitation. And so I went into this meeting, and during the meeting, halfway through, a public official by the name of Bob Swanson came in, who knew about this effort that we're doing. And the Southeast organization had done a lot of good work to help out with the Hispanic community with free computer classes and helping with children at the Spring Fling and Cinco de Mayo, which is a big Spanish celebration they have once a year. And so they knew that we were a good organization, that we're trying to help people. So he knew about our organization. So when he found out about this, he decided to come to the meeting. And about halfway through the meeting, he seemed very uncomfortable and agitated. And he got up and he says, "Joe, I have to tell you something. A miracle just happened. Mm-hmm. We just found $100,000 in our bank account for the local county commissioner that took care of the people in this area." He said, "That's never happened before. Even our accountant doesn't know where it came from. It just like appeared." Mm-hmm. "And out of this $100,000, we'd like to give $10,000 for your clinic. I know it's not much, but it'll be like seed money. People, if they know that we've given you some money, other people will take your project seriously and the money will start flowing." And he was right, because after that, one miracle happened after another.
Oh.
I was nominated by my colleagues at Kaiser for some award that was just started, it was the very first year, called the David M. Lawrence Community Service Award.
Oh.
And so this was a national award, and there's only supposed to be like one person getting the award. So I made it to the state, the regional, and then finally the national finals. And there was three people that made it to the finals, and they decided on the winner. And the winner was going to get $10,000 plus 3 months of paid sabbatical, which means that, you know, you can take 3 months off and you'll get your regular pay. And the winner wasn't me. It was someone who deserved it much more, and I was happy for him. However, they looked at the Ashland Free Medical Clinic and said, "We want to give the Ashland Clinic a little something. We really like the idea behind this clinic. So how much money do you think they gave us for coming in second place?"
The same amount?
$20,000.
Oh, my God.
Double the amount. Have you ever heard of second place getting twice as much? They gave $20,000. And then right after that, we went right through that money, and I said we could use a little bit more money. Without asking or any paperwork, they gave us another award. So that's $30,000. And then about 5 years later, I was nominated again, because I hadn't really officially won it the first year. And this time I did win it. So another $10,000 or $40,000. So all the other winners got $10,000. Our clinic ended up getting $40,000.
Wow.
And just like that, so many other miracles have happened where we've gotten money from other organizations. We continue to get funding every year from Kaiser Permanente. Matter of fact, last year we just got an award for 10 years of service by the local county commissioner. They gave us a nice plaque, and Kaiser Permanente was there to support us, and they have been giving us about $15,000 every single year to help support all the ongoing effort. And they made a surprise announcement at this 10-year anniversary. They said, "We'd like to do something special for the Ashland Free Clinic. In our grant process, we don't allow for renovations. You know, that we never have funded for that in the history, and we probably never will in the future. However, we're making a one-time exception for the Ashland Clinic. We know they need to renovate their clinic, so we're going to give them $50,000 for this renovation.
Wow.
Which is something they've never done. So again, another miracle. And I could speak, and I'm not going to do this so the you and the listeners don't have to worry, I could speak for the next 8 hours just on the miracles.
Oh my God.
I'm going to move to the human resources miracles, because they're equally important. You could have $1 million.
Yes.
In the if you didn't have a bunch of loving individuals to run a clinic, it wouldn't be of any good. And also, you have to be in the right neighborhood. We're in a neighborhood of need, of course. So the human miracles, I'll just describe a couple of them, because there's actually hundreds and hundreds I could talk about also. So one time I was... We didn't have enough Spanish interpreters. Most of the patients we serve are Spanish-speaking, and many of them speak mainly Spanish, and they don't understand English very well. So we have to have Spanish-speaking doctors or translators. Interpreters is a better word. Translating is for written, and interpreting is for the verbal exchange. So we didn't have enough interpreters, and so I was talking to a young man who was helping us run the clinic. His name was Jonathan, who was very good at Spanish. And we asked... It was late on Friday night, and we were talking about how can we get the word out to the Spanish-speaking people so that they can help us. We need more Spanish interpreters. He says, well, maybe you can come to my church, which is just down the block, and we can make an announcement. And so I said, well, that's a great idea, Jonathan, and we're going to have to do something else because it's Friday night. Tomorrow our clinic is going to be open. We don't have enough Spanish interpreters, so why don't we do this? Why don't we both pray to God tonight that, you know, He provides what we need, because we need someone tomorrow and we don't have enough people there. So we both did that, and we went to bed. We came to the clinic the next day. The very first patient I had was a person I had taken care of maybe a month ago. And she came in and she says, Dr. Faniff, I just want to thank you for the help you've given me. It was so very much appreciated. And actually, it's all cleared up. I have no reason to come back except to thank you. And she says, I want to offer my services. Is there any way I can help? I mean, I don't have any medical experience, and I you know, just high school education. I don't know what I can do. However, is there any way I can help? And I said, well, you know, your mother tongue is Spanish, right? That's your native language. She says, yes. I says, well, we need Spanish interpreters. Could you help? She said, I'd be happy to. And so, like that, Swami provided.
Wow. Amazing.
You know, and like that, he's providing everything. One night, usually what I do is, because it's all volunteer, it's really hard to get all the doctors to fill all the slots. And so one time there was not enough doctors to see all the patients that were scheduled the next day. And we see basically, we schedule up to about 24 patients scheduled, and then we see as many walk-ups as we can, so we might see 8 to 10 people who just come in without appointments. And so that day I got home late at work, from work. It was around 10 o'clock at night. It was actually 10 o'clock exactly. And I thought to myself, Swami, I haven't recruited enough doctors. And it's late at night right now. If I call up my doctor friends, I'll probably get them out of bed and disturb their family, their children, things like that. So I says, I don't know what else to do except I feel like a complete failure. And so I just, all I can do is I can pray to you, Swami, please, please, could you just have a doctor show up tomorrow for us? You know, we need another doctor. And with that prayer, I went to bed. So the next morning when I went to the clinic, we have what's called a huddle, you know, before we start, because we always have a few new volunteers, and we introduce everybody so they know what their name is and what their role is for that particular day. And I'm looking for this doctor to show up because I'm hoping for and expecting some miracle. No doctor shows up. And so I figured, okay, Swami just will, you know, provide in some other way, and I just have to be, we'll have to do the best we can. So just as the huddle was breaking, this doctor shows up. Her name is Pam Nissos. Mm. And I almost break down in tears. You know, I was so happy. And then after I went over to her, I says, Pam, how did you know? How did you know? And she said, she said, at 10 o'clock last night, I just got this urge. I just got this urge to turn on the computer, and I just went to the website to see if you need anyone. And I saw he did, and I signed up.
Wow.
So
she has this urge 10 o'clock in the night to check her emails and check her website, and she signs up. And you have prayed to Bhagwan. So amazing. I think every day, as you said, there are miracles happening every moment. I think once you have a pure will, once you have a pure intent, a selfless desire to do something, I think Lord is just waiting. He's if we are in a scale of 1 to 10, if we are eager at 1, He's eager at number 9 to help us. It's just that we have to take that one step. And you just had that leap of faith, you had that urge to serve, and then he's working overtime to make it happen.
Yes.
And as you rightly said, human resource is so important. And well, He can arrange any resource.
That's true. And He has, and He's done the same type of thing on so many weeks. You know, it's just amazing.
Sai Ram, you just heard the first part of the conversation with Dr. Joseph Fanoff, a distinguished dermatologist and the Chief of Medical Staff Education for Physicians and Nurse Practitioners at Kaiser Permanente Medical Center, Union City, California, USA. He's also the Medical Director of the Ashland Free Medical Clinic in California. In conversation with him was Radio Sai's Bishu Prashti, and this was recorded in July 2016.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
భజనలు చేసి భక్తి శ్రద్ధలతో మంగళములు చేసి వారములని విడి మంగళములు పడి జయ హరతి
पूरक निरपार निर्वैर अकाल मूर्त अर्जुनि सेवन गुरु प्रसाद जप आद सच जुगाद सच है भी सच नानक होसी भी सच गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद भगवंत गुरु मेरा पार ब्रह्म गुरु भगवंत गुरु मेरी पूजा गुरु गोविंद गुरु मेरा पार ब्रह्म गुरु भगवंत गुरु मेरी पूजा Thank you.
वाहेगुरु 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 जी बोलो
वाहेगुरु 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 जी बोलो
सतनाम 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 जी बोलो
सतनाम 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 जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए तेरे नाम जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए तेरे नाम जी बोलो
सतनाम 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 जी बोलो
सतनाम 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 जी बोलो
राम 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 जी बोलो
राम 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 जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए राम राम जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए राम राम जी बोलो
कृष्ण 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 जी बोलो
कृष्ण 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 जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए कृष्ण नाम जी बोलो
नित नित जपिए कृष्ण नाम जी बोलो
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल जय जय
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल जय जय
राधा रमण हरि गोविंद जय जय
राधा रमण हरि गोविंद जय जय
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल 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 जय जय
राधा रमण हरि गोविंद जय जय
राधा रमण हरि गोविंद जय जय
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल जय जय
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल जय जय
गोविंद जय जय गोपाल जय जय
Krishna कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू
मुरली मनोहर मोहर
हम भये धारा तुम भये सोना हम भये सुहागा भाई मीरा के प्रभु जी ब्रिज के बासी सुनो हे गोपाल सुनो हे गोपाल मैं तेरी दासी जो तुम तोड़ो पिया मैं नहीं तोड़ू रे तो से प्रीत तोड़े कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू कृष्णा कौन संग जोड़ू
मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर 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 मुरली मनोहर मोहन गिरिधर
मीरा के प्रभु ब्रिज के वासी गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो गिरिधर हो मीरा के प्रभु गिरिधर गिरिधर
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 गिरिधर गिरिधर गिरिधर
Krishna. Namah Shivaya, Namah Shivaya,